It's quite something with Rich and Jane this morning, wasn't it? Not simple and not easy. And you know, life is not simple and life is not easy. And somehow you'd think that when the kids leave, everything's going to be just great. Not quite that way. Remember, I read a little story about a 90-year-old father who is living now with his 60-year-old son. And they were out in the garden putting up poles for beans to grow in the garden. And the old man said, well, I'm going to put them up in these little tripod things, you know, like that. And the son said, Dad, I don't do it that way. I just put one up and we tie them up. They got in this big argument. He said, no. And finally, the young guy, the 60-year-old guy, said, Dad, this is my house. This is my garden. And we are going to put up poles with strings. The old man threw his shovel down, walked, stomped off, and says, these kids, they get 60 and you think they know everything.
And I agree with Jerry. There are tensions in a family, and I'm reminded of the story, true story, of an Air Force family. And the father was transferred to Germany, and the mother came several weeks later with their children, 9 children. She traveled all night, as you do going to Europe on the airplane, got off in the morning, came to customs, 9 children, bags, parcels, backpacks, and the customs official said to her, are all these your children? And she said, yes, sir, they are. And he said, well, before I can allow you to pass, I need to ask if you have any contraband, any drugs, any knives, any guns. And she said, sir, if I had any of those things, I would have used them by now.
You know, there are pressures with the family. And the family does become complicated. And we become very perplexed at how to respond. Rich and Jane didn't know how to respond. They hid for a while. And some of you have gone through things like that. It's interesting that we have dreams for our children, that our children will grow up, they'll receive Christ, they'll marry, and all will go well. But instead, we're very often driven to our knees asking God, what in the world are you doing in our lives? And what he is doing is he is doing what this conference says. He's doing a hidden work in our lives and in the lives of our children, and what's more, in the people all around us.
And as he does a hidden work in our lives, in our families, the best foundation for that hidden work is that he is individually at work in each of us, in a husband and wife, that we are strong in the Lord, that we're growing with him. Our marriages won't grow until we grow individually with him. You know, I think it was Henry Kissinger that said, marriages are made in heaven, but so is thunder and lightning. And we do find that there are these tensions, and growing with the Lord, we're going to find that hidden work being done in our lives. That abrasive rubbing along together in the family is going to help us grow into conformity with Christ. And I think Romans 8:28, we often apply it to the big issues of life and the major disasters and crises that come. But it applies in the small things too, that we know that in all things God works together for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose.
We're going to do 2 things this morning. One, we're going to share a little biblical background, some thinking about what it means to have a heritage and leave a legacy. Then we'd like to just share a few practical items on how you can leave the kind of legacy that you want to leave so that God can continue the hidden work in your life. And there's a key verse, one verse primarily that we're going to think about today. We'll use several, but this one I'd like you to memorize today, now. It's 3 John 4. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Let's just say it together. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. 3 John 4. Okay? If I can remember, we'll keep repeating that during our time together. And certainly there is no greater joy. And that's what we desire. We desire that not only our physical children, but that our spiritual children will walk in truth all the days of our lives. But it doesn't always happen. And if you think of your parents' hopes for you, it didn't always happen the way they expected. All of us are a people with a past. Not so much a personal past, but a history of everybody who has gone before us. And I think of Psalm 16:6. It says, "The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance." That's true. But even with all that goes on in our lives, in the midst of what Rich and Jane are going through, in the midst of what you are going through, we need to go to the Word and saying, the boundary lines have fallen to us in pleasant places, and surely my inheritance is beautiful. Just before Christmas, I visited in my hometown in Iowa, a little town of 100 people. We went back for a wedding. Everybody that was there still is there except me. I left. Everybody's now intermarried, and I'm wondering about the recessive genes coming to play pretty soon. And it made me think much about the past and of growing up there for the first 8.5 years of my life. And I wondered, do I have a delightful heritage? I visited two of my elderly aunts and one in a nursing home, interacted with the people, saw many of them, saw the sister of my kindergarten teacher at the wedding reception. And my uncle says, oh, you got to go talk to her. Well, see, my kindergarten teacher had died when I was in the second grade, and she had tuberculosis. And so as I talked to her sister, she says, oh, listen, Judy Waldy always remembered you, because she remembered when you brought a note over to her and said, dear Miss Waldy, if you'll just get well, I'll stop sucking my thumb. And it's true, right up into grade school. I stopped just before high school. My mother was 17 years old when I was born. She was just a young person. And then a few months later, my father left her. And a divorce in this little tiny town of Garden City. You can imagine what it was like. And everybody talked about it. Everybody felt sorry about it. I was going to bring my baby book. I just got it back here recently from my folks' home. And I looked at the care that my mother had taken to chronicle everything that I did. She loved me deeply. But she no longer had a husband to help. And so I was raised by my mother, my grandfather, and the town. I mean, it literally did take a village. And as we came back into town, I realized that I had a terrific heritage. I was not deprived. In fact, I was a spoiled brat, because everybody loved me, and I had such a wonderful heritage. And as we were back there, I couldn't help but thanking God for that heritage. And let's just flip that on and see how that comes up. But a heritage is the people who have gone before. And we ought to thank God daily for those, even though we have not known them, who have given us the heritage. In 2 Timothy 1:5, it says, talks about Timothy's mother and her grandmother. In chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, it talks about Paul and then Lois and Eunice again. So you can just turn that off and we'll reveal the top one there, if you would. Put a little sheet over it. And what we find out is that you are not just who you are, but you are who you are because of your parents and your grandparents, your environment, your town, your personality, the way you talk, the way you look, the way you think. All is a matter of heritage. Even the godliness could well have come through some things in your family and what they have done. Now, whether or not you had that, now you want to leave that kind of heritage for your own children. One thing to note about a heritage, it is fixed. You cannot change it.
In addition to a heritage, we also have an inheritance. We receive an inheritance from those who have gone before, and we also pass one on to those who are coming behind. And I'm not talking just of a financial inheritance, but we receive a lifestyle from those who went before. We'll leave the same to our children. An emotional heritage, if you think about your parents and how they related with you emotionally, but most of all, a spiritual heritage. Maybe in your family that is beginning with you, or perhaps you received it from those ahead of you. And it is true that surely I have a delightful inheritance from the Lord. But an inheritance is only as good as what you do with it. You can squander it, whether it's finances or spiritual truth, or you can invest it in the next generation coming along. And we want to take care with the inheritance that we receive and that we leave to those behind us.
See, an inheritance has to first be possessed. That's like the land. Secondly, it has to be invested. That is the faithfulness that we are with it. And thirdly, it has to be preserved. That is, it has to be passed on. But all of the inheritance in the world is of little value unless it does something. And that is where the harvest comes in. So the three words from our little time of teaching this morning are heritage, inheritance, and harvest. Because you see, when you have this inheritance, you want to invest it for God, whatever it is. And when you invest into the lives of your children and your grandchildren, you want it to bring forth a harvest of righteousness. And I've jotted down the two familiar verses on harvest, John 4:35 and 36, where it talks about the fact that the fields are white already unto harvest. Don't say there are 4 months and then comes harvest. And then, of course, in Matthew 9, the laborers are few, but the harvest is plentiful. And we want to be a part of that harvest. Now, I would also like to say a harvest of what? Well, one of the things is it ought to be a harvest of godly children and grandchildren. Here's our verse together. 3 John 4. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. So we want to have godly children and grandchildren. We want to have spiritual children and grandchildren. And we also want to have, I must mention this, a harvest in the nations. All the heritage, all the inheritance is of no value unless it's directed to a harvest. And so we have the blessing of heritage. Now we can just put that there. And we have the blessings of inheritance, the obligation of the inheritance, and then the privilege of a harvest. You see the sequence? Your heritage is fixed. It's what you have. Then you have an inheritance which someone gives you. And that is an obligation. When you have an inheritance, there is an obligation to do something with it. And then finally, there's the privilege of harvest. And that harvest is primarily in the lives of people as we invest in their lives. Now we'd like to move to the second little segment of our session together today. And it's some things that are very, very practical. And I'd hope that we would have some time to maybe even have some interaction, and we'll see how this works. First of all, how do you leave a legacy in your family? So what do you want your children and your grandchildren to inherit? What is there that should be there? And go ahead and put that up. Well, turn that off for just a minute. Yeah, we're not quite there yet. First of all, what we want to leave them is first some kind of a legacy. And one of the things they ought to know is your personal testimony. Do they really know how you came to Christ and how God has worked in your life? Have you told them that? Mary, why don't you just share a little of what your testimony is and legacy?
I like the Psalm 78, which, as you may remember, is an outline of some of the things that God did in the nation of Israel. But it begins in a beautiful way in the Living Bible. And it says this in the first few verses. O my people, listen to my teaching. Open your ears to what I am saying, for I will show you lessons from our history, stories handed down to us from former generations. I will reveal these truths to you so that you can describe these glorious deeds of Jehovah to your children and tell them about the mighty miracles he did. Well, we have a privilege of doing that in our family as we're talking with our own children. And when we review our own backgrounds with thanksgiving and praise, then that brings to the forefront those things that are most important to leave to our children. And some of you may think, well, I didn't have a good background, and I'm not sure I have anything to be thankful for. But I remember Lila Trotman, the wife of the founder of the Navigators, saying one time, if you can't thank God for anything else about your parents, you can thank them that he chose them to give you life.
And I think of that with Dave. Mm-hmm. You know, the testimony you shared, Dave, just thank God for the Father who gave you life.
Right. And that was in God's plan from before the foundation of the world. I have a wonderful, godly heritage. My parents became Christians at one at age 13, one at about age 21. And it was very important to them that we know early on of the love of Jesus. When I was pregnant with our first child, I asked my dad, when did you begin training us as children? And he said, oh, about the time you were conceived. You know, so having this kind of forethought for us as their children really showed up in their lives. And as I look back, it wasn't any mighty things that they did, but those small vignettes of life that I now review and see what an example they were for me. My mother and dad had five children, and I only saw my mother ever take a rest on Sunday afternoon. And she always had her Bible. Sometimes she'd drift off, but sometimes she would only be reading her Bible during this quiet period of rest time. And I remember her as a woman who served other people. I grew up in a metropolis compared to Jerry. There were about 600 people in our town. And I remember my mother visiting the sick, washing the hair of women who were ill, and I was encouraged to help in this, visiting people who were blind. And that is a legacy that she left me of her gift of mercy and helps. My father was a pastor, and I remember one time he was preaching on Christ crucified, and he broke down and wept. Well, this was a very strong, reserved man, and to see my father weeping over that sacrificial love of Christ, it's clear in my mind today. My parents always had family devotions, every day. One chapter out of the King James, and then everyone on your knees for a time of prayer. It didn't vary, and it was never optional. Even on vacations, one chapter from King James on our knees. But you know what that showed to me was a commitment to meet God every day. And I try to include a little more variety now that I control the options. But
you used to control the options. Come on.
Well, I still do for me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So although they didn't have a lot of creative ideas, they did that to help us and to show us the right way. My mother had an illness that lasted for 12 years and finally took her life. Very odd, strange illness. Only 100 people documented in the literature at the time she had this disease. And so she spent several of her final years in bed. And Jerry and I were far on the other side of the country, and I used to be so concerned. What is she doing today? I wish I could go in and talk and help. And my father wrote a letter to me one day, and he said, I thought you'd like to know what your mother said to me when I came in from work today, all by yourself through the day. She said, oh, are you home already? She said, the days pass so quickly, there are so many people to pray for. Well, I have quite a ways to go to live up to a legacy of that kind. And then years later, when my father was close to death himself and very ill with Parkinson's disease, as I visited him one day, he said to me, Psalm 119:76 has become my life verse. He spoke slowly and deliberately. And he said, it is good for me to have been afflicted that I might learn of thy statutes. Well, what a legacy for me. Will I be a faithful one in passing on a legacy like this to my children? Will I be a faithful link in the generations from the cross until now? Will my children, my grandchildren, continue to be faithful links? But sometimes, you know, our children don't always understand when we teach them, and they get things a little mixed up. And we try to teach them biblical knowledge, biblical truth, biblical principles, but they get them a little changed around, so we have to keep teaching precept upon precept. And it's sort of like the little girl who said that Lot's wife was a pillar of salt by day and a ball of fire by night.
Or the little guy who said Joshua led the Hebrews in the Battle of Jericho.
And then a little misunderstanding about marriage from the little girl who said that Solomon had 300 wives and 700 porcupines. That could have been true. Or continuing on with the misunderstanding that the epistles were the wives of the apostles.
The one I enjoyed was the little boy who said, Paul preached holy acrimony, which is another name for marriage. And he taught that Christians should have only one wife, and that is called monotony. Well, I really appreciate Mary's dad. He was a godly man. He was a very stern fellow. And but boy, we had some wonderful, wonderful discussions around the Word. And I can remember many times being with him. And by the way, just another little part of the story, when Mary's mother was ill, he left the pastorate and then went and did janitorial work so he would work all night so he could help her finally during the day. And he would often do preaching, and because he'd be so tired in his study, he had a stand-up study so that he wouldn't fall asleep when he was studying.
Stand-up desk,
the whole study standing up. But and God just really used him greatly. And what we'd like to talk about further, besides your inheritance and your testimony and how God has led through your family, I think it's also important to share your struggles. You know, to really share how you have struggled through various aspects of your life. Do they know how you struggled with lordship? Have you ever told them? Have you ever told them how you struggled with sexual temptation? Maybe how you gave in. Maybe how life wasn't so easy. Have you ever told them how you struggled with fear? I remember one time when our eldest daughter was in the third grade, she was just terrified of a teacher. Out here at the Air Force Academy, she just refused to go to school. She just wept. And boy, did it bring some memories back to me, because the same thing had happened to me. After we moved from Iowa out to Washington, I was in just a very insecure situation. And prior to going into the seventh grade, I was so afraid of the seventh grade teacher that I absolutely refused to go to school. So for 1 year, I did not go to school. I was the first homeschooler. I taught myself. They sent me back to Iowa and thinking I'd go to the one-room schoolhouse, and I went one day and decided I wouldn't do that either. Can you imagine what my parents were going through? But I had some incredible fear. And in the eighth grade, I went on and just continued. But just think of what that did to them. And then, so when Kathy had this happen to her, you can imagine how it affected me. And so I've shared with her the fears. Have you ever shared the discouragement? And you, do we have time? Yeah,
no,
you might just
carry on.
Press on?
Yeah, press on.
Press on. Mary was going to share how she got discouraged one day.
You didn't want to hear that.
No. Well, I can tell you. One day, I came home after teaching at the Air Force Academy. I somehow, for some reason, came home in the middle of the day, and I found Mary in bed crying. I said, "What is going on?" So why don't you just...
I guess I'm telling the story.
That's right.
I had felt my health slipping, found out later that I had mono. And the doctor told me that sometimes when your health deteriorates so far that discouragement and depression is a natural side effect of that. And gradually the Lord brought me back to full strength again. A couple of years ago, our eldest daughter went into a deep postpartum depression. And just to be able to sit and talk together and share, "I've been there, honey. I know what it feels like. And God will raise you up again." Part of the inheritance that we can pass on, the struggles as well as the good times.
But you know, the other thing we want to leave, besides a legacy of the struggles we had, we want to leave a legacy of love, that they really know that you love them. Now, I don't know that I've ever seen Mary's dad hug her. Her family are not huggers. And he was a very austere person. I asked Mary, "Well, how did you know that your dad loved you when he was just seemed to be so legalistic?"
It was a good question for me to think back over that. I felt very protected. I knew that my father was always there for me. I felt very guided by my father, sometimes guided a little too closely, but he was always there to offer suggestions. And that guidance and protection was very much around me. He was always consistent. Sometimes I really longed for him to be inconsistent. But I knew when he said something, his word was good. And he kept his promises. I remember one time when he had promised that he was going to drive me to a nearby town and buy a clarinet for me. And he was ill that day. He got up out of bed and drove me to the next town and bought the clarinet. And one of the best ways I saw my father's love was demonstrated to my mother. He was so tender with her. Sometimes I felt a little bit on the outside. There were these glances, these little chuckles together, those things that expressed their love for one another, and I knew that extended to me.
But then we also want a legacy of love for God, that they really know that God is first in our lives. There are times they may resent it. And then a legacy of love for people. They should see us caring for other people, opening up our home, having people with us, sharing our lives, not just saying, well, just you, me, us, our family, and we're going to put a wall around us. We're going to protect you. We're going to go on our little vacations. We're going to do our cruises. We're going to, you know, and not ever to include anyone else. I know the one thing that Mary and I have tried to practice through the years is to just have an open home, to have people in, and our kids have loved it. I mean, when I went into, quote, some kind of management thing with the navigators, it was the worst thing that ever happened to my family from their viewpoint. They loved the cadets. They loved the students. They loved people being around our house and being part of them and having that exchange. But also that they see that we have a love for the helpless, not just the gifted. And I wish I'd had time, and Terry, I'm going to pass it up. I'd have called on you again to ask how they taught their family to share with those who didn't have much. And then a love for the lost, that they should see that we don't just get caught in the Christian community and that's where our whole life is, but that somehow we have a love for those who are without Christ and include them in our lives. And finally, of course, that we have a love for each other, that we together really experience and demonstrate our love for each other as husband and wife. And all of these loves are unconditional. Would you just share on Julie, honey?
When our son was in university, his faith began to slip and to crumble. And this was a deep concern to Jerry and me. He met a girl in the university, a very talented, beautiful person, but not a believer. And when they made plans to marry, we received some counsel. Well, that for a Christian is sin, so you should break fellowship with this person, our son.
Not go to the wedding.
Right.
You know, things of that nature.
Just to totally move out of his life. Jerry and I went before the Lord with this suggestion and felt, no, that is not right. We need to love both of them unconditionally. 6 years after they were married, Steve was murdered on his job. His wife turned to us, and our relationship has become stronger, more sweet, more deep since then. She has also since remarried, and we're still in close touch with her. But if we had broken fellowship, what would have happened to our relationship with Julie? A year before he died, Steve renewed his relationship with the Lord. What would have happened there? So we need to express this unconditional love in our families.
We don't always have to approve what they do, but they have to know that we really do love them. In Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 7, one of the verses says, talking about the law, the statutes, and all that had gone on with Israel, it says, teach them to your children and your children's children. And one of the habits of the Jews was to constantly rehearse leaving Egypt, constantly to rehearse the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, to constantly remember. And so one legacy we want to leave them is memories. Memories that are great memories. Memories, so take time to do this with your kids. Whether it be vacations or special things, I remember when our middle daughter wanted to go see Sean Cassidy or hear him sing. So I took her and a friend, and here was me in the midst of 10,000 screaming girls. But it was a memory. And as I recall, I think there was a snowstorm. It was questionable whether to be able to get to Denver. But to her, it's a memory. And she has wonderful memories that come up out of our lives. And I would like to encourage you to do some other things. I have found a software program called Memories. And that little program is great. So write down that address and that phone number. And what it does, it has 1,200 questions in it, in different categories. And it allows you to leave a written memory. It says, you know, what do you remember about your parents? Who were your classmates? What did your father do? What was a vacation that you remember? What things were difficult? You know, just all kinds of questions. You can just keep doing it, revising it, and whatever. And when you finish, you'll have a biography for your children. a history of your life. So I'd like to encourage you, but also do things like videos and pictures and record your voice so that there is a memory for your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren. However, not all memories are good ones. How do you deal with the bad memories?
In spite of the legacy we try to leave, and in spite of how hard we work in our families, there may be memories that crop up that are not all that pleasant, and our children may not see it the way we hope they'll see it. One of our daughters, and we have several, so I can be fairly anonymous, it came after our son's murder in the aftermath of all that complicated time. She faced us with our inadequacy, our failure as parents, our leaving her with some memories that were not pleasant to her. And it was a very painful thing for us. We had to reflect and review, Lord, what have we done here? Help us move through this thing and understand where we have gone wrong. And as we gained some perspective, we realized what our failures were, but we also saw that some of her perspective was skewed, and her sisters did not feel as she did about all of these things. And it may be that our children will harbor these negative memories. And sometimes, as we heard from Becky and Alan, they're encouraged to look around for negative memories that may or may not be true. And sometimes this fosters long-term resentment and bitterness in our children. But God can heal. God is the Redeemer God. And if you have deliberately hurt your children, unknowingly hurt your children, and that's part of your legacy, or if they have skewed memories, God can heal all of that. And I'm sure you all know Genesis 41:51. No, not really. But it's in the middle of the story of Joseph, and he's had all these troubles and tribulations and injustices done to him. And then he marries, and he has his first son. And he names him, here's your Bible quiz for it. What does he name him?
Manasseh.
Yeah. Who said that? You get the prize.
Yeah.
First in the line to watch. And here's what is said of Joseph when this son was born. Joseph named his firstborn son Manasseh and said, "It's because God has made me forget all my trouble and my father's household. All that sorrow and pain and struggle, God had given him Manasseh." We may need a Manasseh experience, or our children may need a Manasseh experience for trouble and trial and pain in the past.
So we may need to apologize to them. We may need to also live with what they think. We have no other choice, you know. And we need to be sure that we entrust to God as the one who is our defender. It's nobody else. And then don't let, in the middle of whatever you may be going through, to allow the enemy to have victory by living with guilt that is not there. Give thanks when they do well and saying, "Gee, I must have done something right." But when they don't do well, you can still give thanks to God and say, "Gee, I must have done something right." Because God is at work in their lives. And whatever happens, it is His grace. And there may be times where some of you right now have some children that are disappointing you. In Isaiah 1:2, it says, "I have reared children and brought them up, and they have rebelled against me." The perfect father had rebellious children, and that relationship was broken. And he was the one who encouraged John to write in 3 John 4, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth." But God is restoring us. The last verse of the Old Testament Malachi 4:6 says this, "He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their father." Dear Abby received a letter, and it was a fantastic letter. And it was about a young man from a very wealthy family who was about to graduate from high school, but it was the custom in that very affluent neighborhood for the parents to give the graduate an automobile. So this young man, Bill, and his father went out and shopped and found the perfect car. And on the evening of his graduation, his father handed him, instead of the car, a gift-wrapped Bible. And the young man became so angry that he threw the Bible down and stormed out of the house, and he and his father never saw one another again. And it was his news of his father's death that brought him home. And as he sat one night going through his father's possessions that he was supposed to inherit, he came across the Bible that his father had given him. And he brushed away the dust and opened up the Bible and found a cashier's check for the exact amount of the automobile that they had chosen together. Well, I don't know that we ought to wait until death makes us give the check, the thing that our children really want. But I do know that the work that God is doing in our lives, that hidden work, is going to be revealed someday in some way. And I would urge you, and Mary and I would encourage you, to believe God for the hidden work that He is doing in all your family. My mother came to Christ. My stepfather came to Christ. My real father came to Christ. My stepmother came to Christ. My sister came to Christ. She comes down to the Glen here weekly. I saw her a day or so ago and serves. And her husband came to Christ. Her son came to Christ. My cousin has come to Christ. That's why I was back in Iowa. The hidden work that God is doing through the years, through the difficulties, through the things that we think are the worst thing that could ever happen, God is at work in our lives. Let's pray. Father, thank you. You are such a great and glorious God. You are the one who works deeply in our families. And Father, sometimes we feel like we're just being caught up by a wave and have no control, but you're still at work. And we give you praise. Give you praise for what you're doing in Rich and Jane's life and in their son Jason and their daughter Allison. I thank you for what you do in our lives and are doing. And each one here who has a prayer and a concern and a story, Lord, meet our needs as you have promised. We pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.